Welcome to another episode of Space A, brought to you by the Canadian Space Society. Today, I have a very special guest on the podcast today. We are speaking with Zach Trolley, who is a professional engineer. He studies electrical engineering at Lakehead University. He also went to the International Space University for their space studies program. But probably the coolest thing about him is that he spent 2 weeks in a simulation of a trip to Mars in Utah. So welcome to the podcast, Zach. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no worries. We're really glad to have you on today. So my first question to you is, tell us a little bit about your background. And I also want to know what got you excited about space in the first place.
So as you mentioned, I'm an electrical engineer. I'm living in Calgary, Alberta, and most of my career has been spent as a project manager, project engineer in the oil and gas industry here in Alberta. Not a lot of space in my career, but I've always been a huge fan of space. I remember when I was in elementary school, that's when the Pathfinder mission was going on, and the Sojourner rover landed on Mars. And this was right when the internet was very, very brand new. And you could download pictures of the rover from the NASA's website. And that's one of the first times you could do that. Now, of course, Curiosity has its own Instagram, and we get, selfies all the time. That was the first time you could actually see the terrain changing. So they would have pictures of the terrain, and you could see the rover tracks on Mars. And I started, just thinking, if you could put rover tracks, what's it going to take to put, footprints on Mars? So from that age, I became a space fan, would keep up with the missions, always interested in sci-fi, that kind of stuff. And as I grew older, graduated university, sort of my career, I started going to space conferences and getting involved in space groups. And then, as you mentioned, in 2014, I attended the International Space University. And in 2018, I went to the Mars Research Station in Utah, and did a 2-week mission there. And when I was there, I mean, most of these analog missions, they're usually centered around people and experiments and how we will live on the moon, Mars, and asteroids. But really, what struck me was all the infrastructure that goes around these missions and what it's going to take. Just being in the Utah desert, we had you were in the middle of nowhere, so you had to worry about your own power, your own food, your own water. These were actually critical resources. So I started looking into how to get more Canadian businesses and more Canadian industry involved as space, moves forward. That's going to be a bigger part of space exploration.
So the coolest thing about about the introduction that you mentioned was your interest in establishing human presence on the moon and Mars specifically. So what future opportunities about this excite you the most? And what are you currently working on which can support this effort?
So to me, Mars is the ultimate goal of space exploration. Once we learn how to live on Mars, because it's far enough away from Earth that you can't resupply that quickly, the fastest you can expect a resupply is 6 months. So you have to learn to live on Mars with what's available on Mars. So once we learn how to do that, we can go anywhere. All of a sudden, the whole solar system opens up to our exploration, people living in asteroids, living on Mars, living on space stations. All that future opens up when we can figure out Mars. Now, right now, the international community is focused on the moon and using the moon as a stepping stone. It takes maybe a week to get to the moon. So resupply missions can go back and forth, but we can practice living in space there. So the Artemis mission, has a space station. They want to do permanent structures on the moon, and practicing that living away from Earth. And once that's established, once those that infrastructure is established, you now have this kind of railroad between Earth and the moon. And now you have this place where industry can rapidly grow. So what we're trying to do, myself and a few others here in Western Canada have started the Lunar Water Supply Company, and we're trying to build a supply chain in Canada with industry members working on industrial, valves and instruments and drill bits and process equipment to be able to service that economy, to be able to work on the surface of the moon to provide resources for lunar operations.
That sounds very interesting. And I believe you're in the middle of sort of setting up this endeavor right now. But if you want to elaborate a little bit further about what exactly is lunar ice mining and how is it going to help us specifically in the long term?
So water is essential to life, and we take it for granted, especially here in Canada. It literally falls from the sky in Calgary right now. We have a foot of snow on the ground. So it's not something we think of that often, but in space, it's very, very important because it, does not rain in space. So water, you need it for drinking. If you have, astronauts, you need it for growing crops. But you also need it for processing, washing dishes, washing machinery. Any kind of mechanical process requires water because it's a universal solvent. So if you want to have any kind of industry in space or on the moon or in Mars, you're going to need water and to be able to recycle that water, be able to do it. Now, you can also create fuel with water and split it into hydrogen and oxygen and then use it in your rockets directly. So if you have water on the moon and don't have to bring it from Earth up the gravity well, all of a sudden, all your costs drop. So it's easier to get around, it's easier to run your life support, to run your machinery. And that is going to greatly accelerate our ability to move into space, move more people into space, and do more things in space. So that's why we decided to focus on water. And we're working on, just today, there was an announcement about finding more water in the sunny areas around the lunar crater. So we're learning about what's inside that ice, what's, other rocks, minerals, dust involved in it, how we can filter it, how we can access it, and then go out to our industry partners and say, hey, what do we have in Canada that can solve this problem?
Yeah, that sounds very cool and sounds like there are so many different applications for what you're doing. So that sounds awesome. I would love to hear more about how that progresses. And it certainly sounds like it would be an expensive initiative as well. So getting fundings and things like that would be interesting to hear about that in the long term and how it all pans out. So another thing I want to ask you know, you're an engineer by trade and one thing that I always ask people on this podcast, because really it's geared toward young people and who are maybe looking into get into the space industry and wanting to make an impact. So, what advice would you have for budding engineers to expand their knowledge and think about space in a more integrated way from a human perspective, the way that you do?
So a lot of it is going to be doing your own research and being open to new ideas. So when we look at, we're doing an analysis right now on the lunar geology, and it's really hard to take what you've learned in Earth geology and move it to the moon. So on Earth, we have mountains made by tectonic plates. We have oceans and rivers and valleys made by glaciers. So all that does not happen on the moon. The moon was made very differently. The moon geology happens very differently. So you kind of have to do your own research when you're going into a new area. Literally, the books have not been written, which is frustrating, especially if you're a student and you're used to opening up a book and, reading the answer. So a lot of it, you have to do your own research. But at the same time, you don't want to throw out all the knowledge that's been built in your discipline. So you have to put your critical thinking hat on and say, which parts do I want to keep? Which parts are going to help me? And which parts do I need to rewrite and this new scenario? So when we go out to industry, we have a brand new set of operating conditions. It's very cold, it's very dry, we're in a vacuum, it's dusty, but we have a lot of experience drilling in the Arctic, in operating in winter conditions, in operating in remote conditions. So we're going to take what we've learned operating in Canada, and we're going to apply it to a new environment, the moon. And to actively go out and build that future, because no one is going to do that for you. So if I were to give an advice to who is looking to make their, you know, make their stake into the future, is to go out and build it. Find people, find like-minded people, find a cause, find something that excites you, and be ready to put a lot of time into it. You know, it's not going to happen tomorrow, may not even happen next year, but it's something you have to, you know, be willing to put a lot of time into and build yourself.
Yeah, that sounds like some very solid advice. So on that note, what is the greatest challenge or barrier that you see in Canadian space, either in policy or in the industry itself? And do you have any tips on how we can overcome this barrier?
One of the things that I think is holding us back is strong direction and big dreams. So we think back to Apollo, you know, everyone likes to quote Apollo, but the US was successful in that mission because the whole program was focused on one goal. Now, unfortunately, once they met that goal, the program kind of fizzled out. So we need to find, you know, bigger dreams and more substantial goals and a strong direction to carry people there. Because people have short attention spans. You can see it in COVID reactions. You know, people are getting tired of COVID, yet COVID's still here. So you need dedication, and we need that inside our space policy, the Canadian space policy, to bake that dedication in. And traditionally, we've been really good at building robotics. The Canada arm is up and operational. We've done other robotic missions, and we've provided instruments to missions. But now we start asking ourselves, what are the robots going to be doing? And that's the question I hope to be answering, because I believe it's in resources. Because Canada is a resource, you know, mining companies all over the place, oil and gas, farming, water, timber, agriculture, all those things. That's what we do as a country. And we do it through the winter. So we have this great experience to pull upon that I think we can take our current space legacy of robotics and give those robots a task, which would be creating, you know, getting those resources on the moon, asteroids, and Mars to enable further explorations. You know, getting into the rocket game this late wouldn't really fit for Canada, but if we start providing water, if we start providing iron and nickel and cobalt and metals to these facilities, that can be a niche area that Canada, I think, could really succeed in and really flourish in the international community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said about, you know, doing what we do here and doing what we do best, but maybe doing it in space. I think that's an awesome takeaway for Canadians looking to get into space or young people in Canada who are looking to get into the sector as well. So thanks so much for that. So finally, do you have any last pieces of advice or parting words before we conclude the podcast?
When I talk to people about space, you know, especially here in Western Canada, it's not something that's talked about a lot. I always keep with me a $5 bill, because on the $5 bill is the Canada arm. And that image replaced hockey, and nobody complained. People complained about everything, but nobody complained when they replaced hockey with a Canada arm. So I like to remind people about how much space is a part of our national identity. You know, we're a huge country. We rely on it all the time for weather monitoring, for, you know, for forest fires, for communication, all these things. We heavily rely on it. And, you know, we're super proud of it. We love seeing that Canadian maple leaf on the Canada arm. We love it when people talk about Chris Hadfield. These things make us proud of the country. And I think we just need to embrace that and build a coast-to-coast-to-coast space program that can involve, you know, everybody in some fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely going to look at a $5 bill completely differently now. Yeah, that's awesome. And I really urge everyone listening to the podcast to to read up a little bit about topics that interest you in space and to see how you can get involved. You know, we've interviewed a whole bunch of people like yourself, and it's always great to get good advice and to learn about what you guys are doing. So hopefully it'll inspire someone else, maybe another young engineer out there who may want to look into this opportunity as well. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Zach. I hope you enjoyed yourself answering all of our amazing questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned for more exciting episodes from the Canadian Space Society. Bye.